man, but of them hip. Woman, you like hunting or jetting. We ship on the ocean that's a big dive than the woman. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
It's just about 9 o'clock straight up. KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM. Or for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those. KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
Metal detector. Hat of the cousin of a tax collector. Mm-hmm. Automatic sensors in a president's skull. Do you have yesterday's time? Thank you.
you see, I just got this new pit bull terrier. Thing's better than a credit card. Went to the gas station the other day. Got a couple gallons of gas, some oil, spark plug, six-pack. Man says that'll be $15.41. I say, well, goddamn, I forgot my wallet, but I did bring my credit card.
There you go. That's music from Was, not Was, with a song called What Up Dog. As we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. And streaming live, as always, 24/7 on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls here at Talking Animals. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name, not surprisingly perhaps, is Talking Animals. Other less immediate ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. Folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another stirring session of the Serena Sharp Show. And who doesn't love alliteration? I couldn't figure out if we'd get more S's in there, but I certainly did as many as I could. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. So we aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, again, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived, other than the last week's show. It's all there. I like them apples. Thanks again to webmaster extraordinaire, John Taylor. But as you can also see from checking all that stuff out on the website, the heart of the program really is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest was going to be Mo Rocca, the former correspondent on Comedy Central's The Daily Show, who's written a new book, a satirical blast of investigative journalism called All the President's Pets, which is just wonderfully absurd and really funny. I don't even want to spill too many beans because, unfortunately, Mo's father passed away just a few days ago, so of course he won't be joining us today, and we extend our condolences to Mo and his family. And we certainly hope to reschedule him soon, so that's why I don't really want to go into too much detail about the books. I'm still hoping that Mo and I will be able to discuss that at some point when he's feeling better. So the good news, as far as today's show goes, that a guest slated to be with us several weeks from now has graciously agreed to be with us today. She is Ann Palak, an L.A.-based therapist specializing in grief counseling, including pet bereavements. So we'll discuss the process of grief, particularly the phases and feelings that are specific to pet loss, when Ann Palak joins us in a few minutes. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you again of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Any announcements, maybe you're involved with an event or a benefit animal-related coming up that we should be aware of and announcing on the show, any observations in the animal world, of course, any news stories, animal-related, that you might have spotted. They'd all be most welcome. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or again, if you're listening online or just generally the shy type and prefer to IM us those, please do. And as you know, typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck to get your comments on and discuss, we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, Wait for it. Here it comes. Yes. Let's Talk Turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Let's jump in. Now, first story comes to us from Maryland, Mount Nebo, Maryland, to be precise. Headline, this, by the way, from the LA Times, I think last Tuesday or Wednesday. Bearing down on a problem, subheadline, other means of limiting Maryland's ursine population failed, so the state gives hunters their first shot in 51 years. Day one is a big success. Just around daybreak, David Seco staked out a spot in the western woods near a town called Friendsville, climbed a white oak tree and waited under a heavy sky the color of gunmetal. For all the months of protests and legal wrestling that had led to this moment, the opening of a planned six-day bear hunting season in a state that had banned the practice for 51 years, it only took half an hour for Seco to get what he came for. At 7 a.m., with a single shot from 40 yards away, he downed a nine-month-old female black bear. It weighed in at 84 pounds. The day was over before it had begun, and Seco was done by law for the season. Nevertheless, he was proud to have bagged the first. Quote, "I didn't really know if I'd see anything at all," said the 35-year-old outdoors writer from the state's eastern shore, still wearing his orange coat and hat. "The people of Garrett County have wanted to have a hunt for a long time. Bears," he said, "are, quote, just a constant nuisance to them." Seco was one of 381 hunters to participate in an event that animal rights activists had fought mightily to stop. Their efforts culminated unsuccessfully Sunday night with a candlelight vigil in front of the governor's mansion in Annapolis, a four-hour drive to the east. The end result was permission to take 30 black bears from an estimated population of 500. Quote, "There is no justifiable reason to allow hunters to shoot 30 bears," said Michael Markarian, president of the Fund for Animals, which had filed a lawsuit against the state. "It's not going to solve the nuisance problem. It doesn't teach people to store food away from bears. It doesn't reimburse farmers for their crops, etc." Story goes on from there. Any thoughts or comments, though, based on that so far? 949-824-5824, 949-EUCI, KUCI. On a much more sort of upbeat, well-intentioned, perhaps, note, and a bit more locally to boot, the Best Friends Animal Society, which we've had a few different key figures from the society on over the last year or so of the show, and... But among other things, they operate the nation's largest animal sanctuary for abused and abandoned cats, dogs, and other animals. They're based in Kanab, Utah, to be precise. But, again, more locally, if you happen to be listening at least in the Southern California area, let me just read to you about the Best Friends Pet Adoption Festival. It's held three times per year in the Los Angeles area. It's the largest such event in the country, showcasing over 60 local rescue organizations and city shelters and up to 1,500 homeless. The event draws crowds of around 7,500 people per day and succeed in placing 350-400 animals per day in new homes. Best Friends produces, promotes, and organizes all aspects of the adoption festival to support the efforts of L.A. rescuers and shelters to find homes for homeless pets. All the groups and shelters need to do is show up with the animals in their care, and we do the rest, we being Best Friends. From providing volunteer help for load-in, load-out, to distributing water and adopt-me bandanas, there are children's activities, dog agility demonstrations, flyball, specialty vendors, food and refreshments. Admission is free. The Pet Adoption Festivals are in every sense good events, a good feeling, and good results. We invite you to be part of it, and that's going to be held this Saturday and Sunday, November 6th and 7th, at 5801 Wilshire Boulevard, basically the Tar Pits Park, the Tar Pits area, and both days from 11 a.m., to 4 p.m. So, really cool if you can get there. It's just a great way, and you can, in some cases, leave that day with an animal. In other cases, you might have to wait a day or two to be checked out and stuff. But, it's really cool, and again, a lot of animals find homes through this. So, if you want to find out more, you can email us at talkinganimals@aol.com or go to the bestfriends.org site, and there's more information there as well. Now, even more locally than that, and on an adoption-related note, right here within the KUCI community, we have a very cool, sweet cat Looking for a Home. One of the other, one of the DJs here does a really great show. Who already has cats. There seemed to be a cat that was living in or near or under their house. And, not clear exactly what circumstances led that cat there. It had enough care that it clearly wasn't feral. But, anyways, it's a sort of a tuxedo black and white cat. Really, really cute. It's about, they think now, having taken it to the vet and gotten it all checked out and make sure it's in good health. About 4 years old. Front paws are declawed for whatever reason. But all the shots are current. It's got advantage. Sounds like a really nice cat. Loves to sit in laps, follow people around the house. It does need to be an indoor-only kitty, apparently. So if you've been thinking about adopting a cat, this might be the guy for you. So you can email us about that again at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Or you can call directly the woman Wanda, who hosts the amazing show Howdy Licious here on Sunday nights. Who's looking to find a home for this cat? It's area code 714-270-0410. Now, we've talked a few times, in especially the recent months, about the situation with the seals at the Casa Beach, the so-called children's pool in La Jolla. And, well, I'm just going to read some of this because I think that's the best way. Well, first of all, let me just remind you, as we have talked about, I think, before, for whatever reason, the San Diego City Council decided to remove the rope barrier at the children's pool, which essentially protects the seals that have been going there for years and years and years. And as I mentioned before, I mean, I used to go down there sometimes just expressly to hang out and just, like, gaze at these seals. I mean, dozens and dozens of seals of all ages, babies, would just, hang out on the beach there. And then they'd go out, and some of them would swim around for the day, and then come back at the end of the day, sun themselves, hang out with each other, play. I mean, it just was really, really cool. It's just one of those places, like Pier 17, I think it is, whatever, in San Francisco, where they just decide to go, and that's where they go. So for years, that's what's been happening. Well, people have been upset about the access for swimmers and the seals, fouling the waters. I mean, anyway, so the San Diego City Council decided to remove that barrier. All right, so that alone is troubling, but get a load of this. A week or so ago, the people came and attacked a seal on the beach. It was a group of young men. They attacked the seal. They stabbed the animal several times and also turned on a couple who had witnessed the attack. And the seal was then taken to SeaWorld for rehabilitation. And I think, let me see if this even says here, I think that seal died. I mean, because there's been other things. So on the related note is, now this animal group that we often report on their items has hired a security firm to protect the seals at the children's pool in La Jolla. Because, six seals reportedly have been injured since the city council voted 5-3 last month to remove the barrier that kept humans from approaching the animals. And three seals, including the one I think I just mentioned, have died under mysterious circumstances. I'm not sure how mysterious that is, but... So, the president of San Diego Animal Advocates, Jill Fred, says, quote, "The city of San Diego has demonstrated utter disregard for the welfare of the seals." I mean, maybe there's just a lot of other issues on the other side that I just haven't been privy to, but I can't understand why they would do this and expose the seals to that, and then why people, well, obviously, I mean, attacking a seal? Stabbing a seal? Ugh. All right. Thoughts, comments, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. Time now for our mid-news, or thereabouts. Your mileage may vary. Animal quiz. And I think you know how this works. It's a true-false question about animals, of course. And the first person who calls in with the correct answer has a choice of quite a cool array of prizes at this point, if I do say so myself, including the new DVD by Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog, various books, most of which are from guests that have been on the show, but there's various ones, include Meatless Meals for Working People, 4B, the story of the beagle who changed my life, by Kristen von Kreiser, who was on the show, and she kind of discovered and rescued this beagle who turned out had been a lab beagle, and kind of chronicles their life together. Really cool story, and that was a really wonderful interview. Shirley MacLaine book. She's not been a guest on the show yet, but her book is a prize by virtue of the fact that it was co-written by her dog. And we got an assortment of other stuff. CDs, t-shirts, cat toys, safety collars, jewelry, little necklaces, umbrellas. I mean, all kinds of pretty neat stuff. So, you have your choice of those. If you call in with the correct answer on this quiz question or later towards the end of the show when we do Name an Animal Tune. All right? So keep that in mind. I got high stakes here, folks. All right. True or false? Cats use their whiskers to feel their way around. So a mother cat will often bite the whiskers off her newborn kittens to keep them from wandering away from her. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, if you know that answer. And otherwise, we're going to keep keep going. More with more news. Got a few things from the OCPA, that's Orange County People for Animals, recent email alert newsletter. One item is Federal Animals Fighting Bill approved by committee. H.R. 4264, the Animal Fighting Prohibition Enforcement Act, was approved by the House Judiciary Committee. The bill establishes felony penalties for those who violate the federal animal fighting law, covering cockfighting and dogfighting, will ban interstate foreign commerce and the weapons cockfighters strap to birds' legs. The bill is now poised for consideration by the full U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate. Please contact your representative and senators and urge them to support this bill. For legislator contact information, visit the OCPA website, and that's actually OCPAUSA.org/legislation. Also, this is pretty interesting. We've talked, obviously, a number of times about circuses that use animals and various efforts to ban them. Some have been more successful than others. But this is pretty notable. Massachusetts, well, I'll just read this, actually. Citing reports of abuse by trainers, Senator Robert Hedlund is calling on Massachusetts to become the first state to ban circus animals. Hedlund's proposal calls for a statewide ban on the use of non-domesticated exotic animals in circuses. Many cities and towns prohibit circus animals, but there is no statewide ban as of yet. And, well, there's a couple other things here, not surprising, including the seal issue that we just talked about at Children's Beach. So, I think there's a couple of good places to write about that if you want to voice your opinion on the seal, then removing the seal barrier. And let me just double find a quick email for that while I trying to multitask here. Turns out I'm not so good at it. Okay, so one of the places to do is contact is Kathy Campbell, National Marine Fisheries Service, Southwest Regional Office, either by phone at 562-980-4060, or email her at Kathy with a C dot E dot Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L, at NOAA.gov. And also, Councilman, the City, San Diego City Councilman Scott Peters, and his email is scottpeters@sandiego.gov. And just, you know, register your thoughts about the sea lion thing. So, looks like we're probably just about out of time for news. We have time more towards the end of the show. We will come back to some of these. But we do want to get into the comedy corner and then welcome our guest, Ann Palick. So, again, if there are ever any news stories or announcements, events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us any comments about the show, including suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. The email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, as always, and accessibly as always, I suppose, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check it out. It's talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net. And sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every single show we've ever done, sorted photographs, articles both that we've written and that the, say, the LA Times have written about us, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is the second half of a piece from Jerry Seinfeld bit called Horses on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
I've tried horseback riding. I can't really do that. And they don't really give you the good horses when you're not good at it. I found that out. Guy says, what level rider would you say that you are? I go, I don't know, zero, nothing, whatever the system is. I can't do it. Is that clear enough for you? I'm going where the horse wants to go, okay? That's my level. Now, of course, to hear that, they start looking around. All right, is glue stick back yet? How about almost dead? Why don't you saddle him up? So I get on this U-shaped, lightning-quick steed I got here. I had the only horse you could put your feet flat on the ground while you're riding it. I'm riding a hammock here. I'm looking up at my friends. I don't feel like we all got the same kind of horse. It was kind of a secure feeling. I could just kind of walk along with them there. Here. And the horse isn't too thrilled with having me either. The horse knows they may be dumb, but they know you can't ride. And they don't like it. They just stop, you know, and they look up at you with that frightening horsey face, you know, with the those huge nostrils and that big bowling ball eye. And chill out, Hopalong. I know the trail. Yeah, I'm here every goddamn day, okay? And I really appreciate the kicking while I'm taking a leak, too. Yeah, thanks a lot. That really improves the already wonderful life that I have. People either sitting on me or kicking me while I'm peeing. I've got a real sweet gig here at the ranch. Get out of a car that has 300 horsepower to sit on an animal that has one. Why do we use the term horsepower? Is that also to insult the horse? The space shuttle rocket boosters, each one has 20 million horsepower. Why are we still comparing it with the horse? Any chance we're going to go back to using horses for rockets, trying to keep track of how many we're going to need? Hey, horses, the rocket engines broke down. Can you get 20 million friends together really fast?
20 million, that's a lot.
They do make glue out of horses. I have no idea how they do it or who even saw that potential. That's a brainstorm in my book. But what are you, working in a stationery store? You see a horse walk by the window? Wait a minute. I think he could be glue. Are you sure? I'm positive. How do we pick out the really sticky ones? You leave that to me. What about that one over there? He's weaving around. He looks like he's out of his mind. He'll be crazy glue. To me, the toughest part of the horse's life is the horse trailer. I don't know who designed that. Is that the best way to move a horse out on the highway? Is that what we all need to see? Their huge, fat, disgusting asses right in my face? Is it good for the horses? They're probably standing in the back going, "Do you feel a draft, Bill?" "I can't see anything back there, but it's awfully breezy, isn't it?" "You don't think our huge fat asses are hanging out the back of this truck, do you? Why the hell would they do that to us? They already ride us around and kick us while we're peeing. What's the point in sticking our ass out of a truck?"
All right, that's Jerry Seinfeld with the second part of a piece called Horses, taken from his album titled I'm Telling You for the Last Time. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. In fact, some of you no doubt are listening that very way. And some of you, we hope, perhaps arrived there through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Ann Palak, an LA-based therapist specializing in grief counseling, including pet bereavements. So we'll discuss the process of grief, particularly the phases and feelings specific to pet loss and other related issues. So let's remind you out there in the KUCI land of the phone number to join us, 949-824-5824, as we welcome Ann Palak. Are you there, Ann?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us this morning on Talking Animals.
Oh, my pleasure.
And as you kind of heard earlier in the show as well, I kind of mentioned only just a sort of quick couple of phrases about you. But before we really delve into the areas of grief and pet bereavement, I think it would be useful for you to fill us in a bit about your background, your training, your practice, and then we'll sort of go from there.
Oh, okay. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I specialize in grief counseling, which I thought there was a real need for. And as an animal lover all my life, I've had, you know, friends who over the years have lost pets who have died, and I thought, you know, there is a real need for this. And up until recently, there hasn't been that much support for people who've lost pets.
I was just going to say, so how recent has it been that you've taken your professional training and sort of intersected it really with the personal interest in animals yourself and some of the friends, obviously, that have had that kind of struggle?
Oh, I guess about 2.5 years now,
mm-hmm.
I'd say. I've kind of settled in that,
yeah,
among other things.
Sure. So, if you can even quantify it this way, like what percentage would you say of your practice does involve people who you're kind of, you know, helping with pet loss, pet bereavement?
Yeah, I would say about a third at this point.
Wow.
I'm on some, you know, some websites and things, and people know where to find me. So as a result, they, you know, often come to me for that. So
sure.
That's a big need.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. Well, I think we should then obviously talk, sort of get right into the process and phases of grief. But in case it'll give us kind of a different path into it and maybe also help some of our listeners, let me kind of frame this initially, at least in a very personal way. I mean, one of the animals that lives with us is our beloved cat Otis, who's 14, kind of early stage kidney failure, dogged, so to speak, by a variety of other health problems. Mm-hmm. He's a tough old guy. He's a scrapper who's rallied, you know, from at least a couple situations where I really thought we were maybe going to lose him. But still, at some point, we are going to lose him. And that's, you know, frankly, a day I really, you know, dread and fear, personally, just because I've been roughed up by loss. But, I mean, I think everybody probably has at least some elements of those feelings. Are there ways you'd suggest, you know, I could sort of better prepare myself for that? Or is it really not wise to deal with that kind of loss and grief in sort of an anticipatory way?
I think it can help to have the anticipatory feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure you have, you know, a support system going, And, you know, I mean, you might try, you know, talking to him, talking to yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, just realizing that that may come about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know when we have pets to begin with, we automatically may know, okay, we may outlive them. We probably will. There's always that in the back of our mind.
Sure. But yeah, you don't, I mean, at least unless you're faced with something medical or something else, at least I don't think I do, and I'm sure probably a lot of
yeah.
people, you don't think in those terms, even though intellectually, of course, you should.
Right, yeah, but yeah, you don't feel it at the time. Yeah,
yeah.
You just kind of put that in the back and don't think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard thing, just knowing that. I mean, just
yeah.
you know, taking every day at a time and... You know, then you also do, though, have the advantage that you're not going to just let time go and all of a sudden, oh, now today he died and I'm not having expected it.
Yeah, well, I certainly won't
be
blindsided by it. That's a
yeah.
plus. But I also just wondered, too, if you know, if it's not necessarily, you know, helpful, particularly or productive to be, you know, thinking this way or even talking this way, because, you know, it, you know, whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen, and there isn't maybe that much I can do. But I didn't know, on the other hand, if it was, you know, somehow a bit healthier to sort of be at least slightly in that kind of anticipatory mode.
Yeah, I think it is slightly more helpful as
mm-hmm.
long as you don't get too bogged down
mm-hmm.
and it impacts the time that you have with him.
Right, right, so, yeah. Okay.
So I think that's not a bad thing.
Okay, well, that's good. Sounds like I'm at least sort of on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about kind of just the inherent phases and kind of aspects of grief that you know, related to loss generally, and then maybe you could kind of address that relative to the ones that are specific to pet loss.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in our country we have trouble a lot of times with grief in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard for us to, you know, we don't want to intrude on other people. It's hard for, we want to say magic words to help other people feel better. It can be hard to get support, you know, in general.
Yeah.
With any loss. And I heard about a recent U.S. informal survey that people, your average person on the street thinks that you should be able to recover from grief in 48 hours to 2 weeks.
Wow.
I
wonder how many of those,
time.
Yeah, I wonder how many people that you know, made up that percentage, you know, have had much personal
no,
dealings
I,
with, you
I,
know.
I wouldn't think so. I think
yeah.
it's just a feeling people have.
Yeah.
So, one way I like to look at grief is kind of as an illness. The dictionary definition of convalescence says it's a gradual return to health and strength after an illness. And I think if we look at it as kind of an illness, just in that this is a normal process that it'll take us a little time to recover, I think it's easier for us to get through and easier for other people even.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not just all in your mind.
Yeah.
It is an emotional loss.
Sure.
But it's very real and very normal and painful.
Right. And
so, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because sort of on a related note and back to that sort of that whole finding that you just quoted. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of, it seems like any time someone suffers a loss, there will be certain people who either, again, are sufficiently inexperienced, like it sounds like at least a large portion of the respondents were, or just, you know, sort of awkward about the situation. So when it
mm-hmm.
when it comes to, you know, what to say, they find themselves, I think, saying inappropriate or insensitive things, not, you know, obviously trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's how it comes across.
Right, and then it seems like the possibility for that seems to expand when it's the loss of a pet, like, you know, ostensibly, again, well-meaning people actually say things like, well, thank God it was just an animal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah, at least it wasn't somebody, you know,
yeah.
a real person.
Right.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about, like, I mean, because, again, you must have dealt with a lot of that if now one-third of your practice is sort of helping people with pet loss. I mean, how do you know, how do people kind of steer through that, and how do they sort of, you know, deal with people who are saying things like that when they're obviously in great pain?
I think you have to be careful with the people that you you talk to about it.
Yeah.
I think you need to seek out people who you find sympathetic. You know, it's, you know, realizing that they mean well, you know, you might just say, well, he, you know, my cat was very important to me,
mm-hmm.
and just not, maybe just not get into it with
sure.
them if possible.
Yeah.
find people that you know will be sympathetic to you, and don't start feeling that way yourself. Like, well, maybe I am crazy. It was just an animal.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Don't feel that you're crazy, because it's an important relationship that you've lost.
Right. Hey, Ann, looks like we might have a call. Would you mind taking a listener question?
Oh, not at all.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Ann Palick. It's a Talking Animals.
Yes, thank you. I would just like to ask a question. I have a close relative who's faced with having to have a dog put down. And is there a discernible difference between knowing this has to be done? It's not through illness. It's just an aggression situation that can't be corrected. They've tried everything. I'm just wondering, is there a real difference in, is there much more guilt attached because this has to be done after exhausting all avenues? Have you had any experience with that?
I haven't had that particular experience, but it sounds as if there could be more guilt associated with it, because it's not as if, you know, they have tried everything, but they just are at a loss, and you feel like, well, maybe I should have tried more, maybe I should have done this or that, and that can be a very guilt-provoking process, you know, but it's very personal. Only you can make that decision. You know what to do.
I was just wondering if you haven't had, this isn't something that happens to you as often as the other situation, I take it.
Right, you're right about that.
Right,
yeah,
I
usually
see.
It's people.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm really getting a lot out of the show. I appreciate talking to you.
Thanks for your call.
Welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, that was something I was going to get into, but that, maybe I should get to that now, because I think... you know, that you know, as we've sort of talked about, I mean, well, actually, let me go back to what you said a moment ago, and then I'm going to hook that maybe together with the caller's question, because one of the things you touched on right before we took the call was again, people making those comments and not understanding what I think is a key point here is the quality of the relationship. If I have a certain relationship with my cat, Otis... you know, who is anyone to say how different that should or can be between the relationship I have with the human, including the human that's saying, "Hey, thank God it was just an animal." That relationship's in jeopardy anyway. But yeah, but isn't that a big part of it, Ann? Seriously though, is that it's you know, those distinctions can't necessarily be made or shouldn't necessarily be made as far as how people are responding to that kind of loss.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because it isn't whether our loved one was a person or an animal that determines our right to be upset. It's the quality of the relationship. It's that precious animal, that precious relationship, and what your animal meant to you.
Right.
It's going to take time to recover from the loss of any important relationship.
Right, so that's the thing. So who's to say, really, from the outside, where that stacks up with a human relationship when it comes to loss, right?
Yeah, they don't know what it was like. They weren't part of that relationship.
Yeah.
So they really don't have much to say about it. I mean, they do, but that's, you know, they don't know what it was like.
Sure. Well, then I want to hook this back together in a sec, but first I want to remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. We're speaking with Ann Palick, a therapist who specializes in grief counseling, including pet bereavement. So if you'd like to join the conversation or have a question like our caller just did for Ann, please call us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or if you'd like to IM us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. So then, yeah, back to sort of... so this might hook in, I think, then now to the question that the caller had is... So we're sort of pointing out that it may be unwise, if not unkind, to respond too differently when someone loses an animal as opposed to a human. But there still are differences, and I assume, you know, like the grief and denial might be largely the same, but you just touched on one, and sort of the caller really about the guilt can be quite different. Can you sort of address that?
Yeah. I think for animals, you know, they're always we're always responsible for them permanently. You know, they don't grow up and leave home and take care of themselves. We always have that kind of a bond with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're the ones who take them to the vet and find out about new treatments and give them their food and everything. So that's on us. So we can feel very guilty if something goes wrong or, you know, they get sick.
Yeah.
I think that comes up more than with humans.
Right. So then there's also then, I guess, kind of what you touched on with the caller is the whole issue of, well, could I have done more? And then this situation that the caller had, obviously, that they've done everything, they've explored everything, so there probably isn't much choice. But I'm sure there's also, again, probably some of the people that you see in your practice, the situation of, I should have done more. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that kind of guilt. And how do you kind of, how do you help them sort of, you know, guide them through that? Because that seems like that'd be very tough.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that's helpful is that you kind of let them wear out their question of guilt.
Mm.
Okay, what could you really have done? You know, you kind of go down that road with them. Could you really have done that? You know, and then they finally, they'll realize, wait a minute, no, I couldn't have. I already did that. I already thought of that, and I decided not to do whatever that thing was.
Yeah.
And they finally come to, it finally turns into regret rather than guilt. Like, it's not my fault.
Ah,
I did
okay.
Everything I could.
Okay.
That's a sign that you're getting recovery from it.
Okay.
You
know, so
you did the best you could.
Right. So you just got to kind of keep sort of pulling them down that path or letting them travel down that path till the guilt diminishes and the, you know, it becomes something different.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And then thinking about one thing that some people find helpful is you write a little letter to your pet if you're really feeling guilty. You know, I'm sorry I didn't take you to the vet. I'm sorry I did whatever. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, let your pet write a little letter back to you. These are people who are, you know, writing, inclined to writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and like, oh, no, it's really okay. I know you loved me. You did the best you could. I'm, you know, whatever. You know.
Oh, so the person grieving writes the letter to the pet and then mm-hmm. writes the response back as the pet.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you like if you're right-handed, you write the letter to your pet with your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then with your left hand, you write the, you know, write from the pet. And it's
like
a little kid writing, but it's kind of more pet-like in a way.
Oh, that's great. What a neat,
Yeah. So that's helpful to some people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And then sort of get, you know, also back in, but maybe less the specific situation that the caller asked about. But when it, I think we kind of, you know, for this conversation, we sort of, you know, have to deal a little bit with the discussion about euthanasia and the feelings that surround that. So how does that, I mean, you know, what are the key things people are grappling with that you see and how do those things kind of get addressed?
Well, one thing that comes up a lot is quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to kind of make a decision at some point. You know, is my pet really suffering? You know, and sometimes there's a temptation to keep your pet alive longer for yourself because you don't want to lose them. You know, for some people, they just long as they're alive, the pet is alive, there's still hope.
Yeah.
But I think there comes a clear point for many people. Look, this isn't good. I need to. You know, let my pet die without pain. I need to end the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of guilt with that. You know, some people will, you know, regret that they did it, that they did the euthanasia. They miss them so much, and it makes them feel as if they made the wrong decision.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Even though they may have made the right decision for all the right reasons. But that's such a difficult situation.
Yeah.
You know, you can second-guess yourself, you know, till the cows come home.
Sure, sure. But, well, like you say, that must be, since we're just talking about the guilt,
I
could see that being a very singular form of guilt if they think, oh, my gosh, I shouldn't have gone the euthanasia route.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but then a lot of times they'll come back around and say, you know, I know that was the right thing.
Right.
It just felt so painful and awful. But, yeah, that's very, very fraught with, you know, pain about that.
Sure. And just generally about these kinds of things or just, you know, again, I'm sure it's hard to sort of generalize, but in terms of, you know, like steps toward recovery for the people mm-hmm. that you are seeing mm-hmm. with pet bereavement, I mean, you know, what are they generally and you know, just ballpark, what, you know, what's a kind of a time frame for most people to sort of, you know, and again, everybody's different and their situations are different, but just to sort of work through this where they're really starting to feel, you know, a little more themselves and a little more, you know, reconciled with it.
Well, one of the hardest things about grief is that you feel as if you'll never feel better.
Right.
You'll never get through it.
Sure.
So you just take a few minutes at a time. But I think, you know, if you should start having a couple of good days within possibly 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
You know, everyone's different, and
mm-hmm.
it all depends if there are complicating factors. But that would
sure.
be my kind of guideline. You should start to have some okay days now and again.
Right, and I guess you just hope that there starts to be more and more proportionately
mm-hmm.
From that period. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are you, let's say, I mean, some people I'm sure that you see probably have multiple pets, but let's say that someone that you see, you know, has lost kind of their only pet that they've had at that moment. Do you have kind of any kind of general guidance about when is a good time to get another pet? Is there a time that's sort of too soon or not soon enough in your experience? Or
I've heard all different things, but mm-hmm. my own feeling is that when you start to have more good days than really bad days,
mm-hmm.
you feel ready to reinvest love in
mm-hmm.
another animal, and you start looking at, oh, that's a nice, you know, I like that one, that
mm-hmm.
one. Then that is the time to start considering it.
I see. Okay. Great. And I think we're just about nearing the end of our time, Ann, but any other just general, you know, comments or advice or tips that you might give people who either are going through this now or in my case, for example, you know, maybe going through it, you know, somewhere in the near future, and really almost anybody who has pets, although, you know, I guess obviously certain kind of birds, you can sort of, you know, hold off on that a lot longer, but I mean, those who have cats or dogs or rabbits or those kind of things, I mean, you're going to deal with pet loss. So, I mean,
yeah.
Is there any sort of just beyond some of the things you've already said that just might be helpful for people to keep in mind as we near the end of our time here today?
I guess just enjoy the relationship and the love that you have now,
mm-hmm.
and know that your ability to love is one of the most important things. And that you will be able to get through the loss. You know, the feelings will just wave over you like ocean waves, but you just have to ride them out and know that you will be able to get through it and recover and feel better again.
Yeah, yeah.
Any of that, just, you know, take care of yourself and, you know that you have that anchor. Know
right.
that you're going to be okay with time and support.
And I guess, I can say this because it would probably be self-serving for you to, but I guess, you know, for a lot of people, it probably is best to be kind of guided through this process, at least for a time, with a therapist like yourself.
It can be very helpful, especially
mm-hmm.
if you don't have a lot of, you know, support around you.
Sure.
Especially if your pet was your main source of support, or if, you know, you don't know a whole lot of people who
right.
are, you know, pet lovers, and especially if you have other issues at the same time,
yeah,
like illness, job loss, relationship problems, and, you know, unresolved prior losses.
Yeah.
Had your father die or whatever, other
sure.
things that they can mount up.
Yeah, it hooks into a larger range of issues, I'm sure, in history.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ann, let me be sure to tell the listeners, and I'll mention this again shortly, too, but you do have a website, which I think is really great and interesting for some of this, and of course, if you want to contact you, they can do it through that as well. It's
mm-hmm.
www.therapy-conscious.com, and among the things on there is, you know, just the various elements of your practice, but two, sort of corollary to what we've been talking about here about the idea of people who may or may not love animals too much, which I think is really interesting. I don't know if you want to say a couple of quick words before we're just sort of really nearing the end of our time here, but I just think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to love animals too much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's our capacity to love is what it speaks of. And
yeah.
we have, you know, that's one of our best human attributes, and we just, you know, the more animals, the more love, and we can love people, we can love, you know, so many beings.
Right.
And that's really important. It's the love, not the object of our love, that's so important. It's, we have so much capacity to love, and, you know, it's not just an animal.
Right.
At all.
And I suppose we can't let you go without asking about the animals in your own household. Who are we hearing there in the background? And
oh,
who do you have?
Well, I have two large birds.
Oh, cool.
That I've had for 13 years.
Great.
I've,
well,
I've been very fortunate with their health. They've
yeah.
been fine.
And what kind of birds are they specifically?
I have a military macaw.
Wow, cool.
Big green, and a lesser sulfur-crested cockatoo.
Nice. And what are their names?
Grendel and Arabella.
Wow, nice.
Grendel's the macaw and Arabella's the cockatoo.
I love it. Great.
Yeah, they're great birds.
Well, Ann, thank you so much. We really appreciate you joining us today on Talking Animals and kind of filling us in on, you know, obviously it's not a particularly fun-filled, upbeat topic, but really, really important and, you know, so helpful to people, I think, that just, you know, when they're going through this or when they think they might be, I just think this stuff is very, very valuable. So thank you again for your time and joining us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
All right. Take care
okay.
now.
Okay.
Bye-bye
right.
now.
Bye.
Again, I want to thank Ann Palak for joining us on Talking Animals. Her website, one more time, is therapy, www.therapy-conscious.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And it's time to proceed to name that animal tune. Again, it's pretty much like any version of name that tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I'll play a snippet of this here song, and there'll be a prize. That's right, we talked about the prizes earlier in the show that you can choose from. For the first caller who correctly identifies this song, so as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please phone us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So let's get started. It's name an animal tune. And even if it's not the original artist, I think you'll perhaps recognize this one.
All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird.
All right, can you name that animal to you? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. Well, we have a moment or two here before we wrap up the show and get into our final animal song and etc. So I'm going to hit a couple more news items, including this one that I thought was quite striking from over the weekend. From Richland, Washington, Faith, a four-year-old Rottweiler, phoned 911 when Leanna Beasley fell out of her wheelchair and barked urgently into the receiver until the dispatcher sent help. Then the service dog unlocked the front door for the police officer. Quote, I sensed there was a problem on the other end of the 911 call, said dispatcher Jenny Buchanan. The dog was too persistent in barking directly into the phone receiver. I knew she was trying to tell me something. Faith was trained to summon help by pushing a speed dial button on the phone with her nose after taking the receiver off the hook, said her owner, Beasley, 45, who suffers grand mal seizures. Guided by experts at the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound, Beasley helped train Faith herself. The day of the fall, Faith had, quote, been acting very clingy, wanting to be touching me all day long, Beasley said Thursday. The dog, whose sensitive nose can detect changes in Beasley's body chemistry, is trained to alert her owner to impending seizures. So that's pretty darn fancy, pretty cool, pretty impressive. Also, here's kind of a weird one from Thailand. 23 tigers died and 30 more are sick from bird flu at a private zoo in Thailand after eating infected chickens. Tigers have been dying at the Sriracha Tiger Zoo in central Chonburi province since September 14th, said Chiral Truvinthingpong, director of the Bird Flu Prevention and Elimination Center. The animal park was closed while authorities investigated. And perhaps lastly, for today, once again, want to return to the Animal Rescue Site. It's a website, www.theanimalrescuesite.com, and you can go there every day. When you get there, click on the section that says Feed an Animal in Need, and through an arrangement with corporate sponsors and advertisers, each time you do that, it frees up some money to feed or otherwise care for abandoned and neglected animals in a variety of shelters or other facilities. So again, theanimalrescuesite.com. Click on Feed an Animal Need. You can do it every day. And in fact, we urge you to do it every day. So how about that? All right. How about that? All right. Well, I am Duncan Strauss. We have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Ann Palick, for joining us on Talking Animals. Her website is therapy-conscious.com. Therapy-conscious.com. I also want to thank you for listening and for the phone call we received. Next Monday, our guest will be Mike Arms, director of the Helen Woodward Animal Center, a nationally recognized facility in Rancho Santa Fe, California. So I hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next Monday, November 8th. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like that each weekday from 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone on Monday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. It's truly eclectic, from Afrobeat to Zydeco. That's A to Z, pal. So when you have a chance some Monday night, please check it out. I'll be back here in a few hours for that, if as crazy as that is. And I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. I also encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@aol.com. We look forward to hearing from you, any of those things, all those things. I really do. So please stay tuned, meanwhile, for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And please vote tomorrow. Please vote tomorrow. Please vote tomorrow. So, as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. A darn peppy one at that. This is John Delafos and the Eunice Playboys with Watch That Dog on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Watch that dog. Watch that dog. That dog in bed. That dog on the bite. Watch that dog. That dog is mad. He's still hanging low.
Watch that dog.
Watch that dog. Watch that dog. That dog is mad. That dog gonna bite you. Watch that dog. Watch that dog. That dog is mad. He's still hanging low.
That dog bite your dog. That dog gonna bite you.
Yeah.